Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
All right, peace and blessings, peace and blessings. Assalamu alaikum, shalom. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And we are going to see today's topic, why the Black Liberation Movement exists. And I am a little at loss of words because I'm waiting for everybody else to join in. I want to go ahead and start before everybody else gets here. So since we're waiting, I'll go ahead and talk a little bit about Black August, since this is August. And it's a great thing. Well, I discovered yesterday on our Tuesday program that not a lot of people really know what Black August is and why is there a need for Black August, especially when you have Black History Month. But if you really understand, once you understand the need of why there is a Black August, what it is that you're really not so much celebrate, but you're remembering and you're cherishing versus Black History Month, is a very two different things. The easy way to compare it, Black History Month is more like your bourgeoisie black people.
Yeah.
They'll take Black History Month and be with their white friends and celebrate, yeah, let's hear Dr. King. But Black August. Black August, that's for us. See, Black August, dealing with this, there's no ifs, ands, and buts or maybe. It is exactly what it is. Do you know when Ashanti Shakur was taken away from the clutches of the enemy, they walked into the prison. They walked into the prison and walked her out of the prison. Unheard of. Unheard of. Black people hijacking airplanes and getting the airplane redirected, taking them to Cuba because they were being framed for killing police officers when police officers were out there hunting and trying to kill them. We're talking about Black Office. Black Office is about you flexing, you showing your strength. Black Office ain't about somebody going to beg, Master, can I have a day? Black Office is about you take what you want. They wanted Ashanti Shakur free, they went and took her out of the prison. That's Black Office. Brother Hill, Charlie Hill, did not want to go to prison for a crime he did not commit. They said, nah, baby, the plane is going to Cuba. It's being rerouted. Get me to Cuba. The difference has changed. The tempo has changed. Because Black History Month, you beg for what you want. Black August, you take it. You take it. And so we who are Black first, we got to understand the difference between the two so that you can teach your children. So they'll know the difference between the two. While we're working out a little of this technical difficulty, let's see, we get hold on. I'm sending a text now to see where is Brother Patrick. But yes, back to Black Hawk. Hold on 1 second. Hey, man. Come on. Let me call you. Let me call you right back, okay? Okay. Love you. I'm like, okay. Well, I have so many things going on. My oldest daughter is leaving, going to California today to start her second year in college. And I was having a conversation with her while she was waiting at the airport. And it's something when your children, it's time for them to grow their wings. But it's something that we can't push to the side. It is what it is. But back to our topic or back to what I'm talking about until Brother Patrick gets. All right, sorry about that. So the history behind Black August. George Jackson, our brother, was an activist. He died at the California prison on August 21st, 1971. Brother George was a very good leader. His brother. Now, when you understand George Jackson and you understand his brother, how his brother wanted his brother to be out of jail. So they went into the courtroom They took everybody in the courtroom hostage. They put a shotgun and tied the shotgun to the neck of the judge, right? And so they made a plan that they were going to get out of there with it. You know, you got to give them an A for effort. You got to give them an A for effort. But they didn't, of course, they didn't make it, you know, out alive. Judge got killed. I think only one brother who was in the courtroom for the trial, but not for that trial, got caught up in the incident as well. And he was taken, and he's still alive, and he's serving life in prison right now. He actually wrote me back in 2015. I was working heavily with the incarcerated people, and he asked me to represent him. But wire, so I really couldn't get there and do the things that he needed to be done. So George Jackson received 1 year to life in 1960 for allegedly stealing $70 from a Los Angeles gasoline station. Okay, they sentenced him from one year to life for stealing $70 out of a gas station. So here you have something that is an injustice. And his brother said, hell, my brother ain't going to serve a year to life for so-called stealing $70. I'm going to break my brother out. I'm going to get my brother out. If I don't get him out, then blood is going to flow. Life is going to be lost. And so the judge and I think the court reporter, a lot of them lost their lives that day. That was a black man that was determined to do what needed to be done. So during his time behind bars, Brother George began studying the ideas of Karl Marx and Vladimir Lenin in the book called The Rise and Fall of California's Radical Prison Movement. Brother George is considered one of the most outspoken voices on racism in the criminal justice system. Again, at that time, so Brother George, Brother Jonathan, now it's from my understanding that George Jackson and Angela Davis at the time they were dating, and so Jonathan Jackson was the security for Angela Davis. So, but dealing with the BLM, Black Liberation Movement, we have to understand that the BLM was an offshoot of the Black Panthers. So the Black Panthers, they were out front on top of the ground, rah, 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 rah. But the BLM, they worked underground. They worked underground, and they did what needed to get done. Right, they wasn't about no marching, they wasn't about no protesting, they wasn't about pleading and begging, anything. Because the BLM, now their starter or their general was Eldrick Cleaver. Now, where Eldrick Cleaver and Bobby Seale and Huey Newton differed, Eldrick Cleaver at that time was ready to kill a cracker. Ain't no ifs, ands, and buts about. He was ready. Look, we just need to go at him. We need to hit him. We need to hit him hard and fuck it. Let the chips fall where they may. That was Eldrick Cleaver. But Bobby Seale, Huey Newton, they wasn't all the way there. You know, they were still with the protesting. They were still with the marching. You know, when you talk about, well, you know, well, we're off the pigs, and we'll do this and we'll do that. The real people that was really about that type of life was the BLM. They the one was about that type of life. They didn't have a problem with going up and popping somebody because they earned it. Now, this is the group that the cracker don't want you to know anything about. He doesn't want you to know anything about this group. Why? Simply because if you know about it, then it will give you an idea of what you can do. Because I'm telling you, when I understood that not only were we breaking people out of jail, and not during, you know, when you think of somebody being broken out of jail, you think that it happens while they're in transition, coming from one jail to the courthouse or, you know, something like that, because that's the most lax time where security is not that strong. So that's the optimum time to do something like that. No, they didn't do it then. They walked into the jail and walked her out. They walked into the jail and walked her out. And before she got to Cuba, she was still in America for a while, hiding out, chilling, and they couldn't find her. Then they got her to Cuba. Then they got her to Cuba. So if they were still doing, you know, what they did back then, she would probably still be able to be here in America. But you all know, some nigga, some low-life nigga, would turn around and steal the beans, especially now that she has $1 million bounty on her head. Some nigga would steal the beans, thinking they were going to collect some money. So she's out in Cuba. But that's what determination does for you. That's what being prepared does for you. When you decide, I'm going to do this. Period, point blank. Ain't no ifs, ands, and buts. This is what I'm going to do because I said it. I'm going to free my sister. And you plan it and you execute it. And they planned it and they executed it. And if you go back and see, because they had the news clippings, you know, on YouTube where they show you the evening news. And you look at these crackers befuddled. They don't even know what's going on. They don't even understand how did these niggas were able to come in and walk her out and they not dead? How did these niggas come take our nigga and they not dead? How does that happen? Blow their mind. Because the level that the Black Liberation Army fought on, the cracker could not conceive it. He could not conceive it. When they began to hijack planes to take them to Cuba, the cracker couldn't conceive of a nigga hijacking no plane. Cracker couldn't conceive of it. I mean, look, they were doing this so regularly where Bobby Seale and somebody else was coming from L.A. going to New York. And so when they got onto the plane, they asked the stewardess a question. Is it the same amount of miles to go from here to New York as it would be to go from here to Cuba? And when they said that, the stewardess got nervous, went and told the pilot, hey, we better land this plane because we got people asking about going to Cuba. They might try to hijack us. So they had to land the plane in Chicago. They land the plane in Chicago. And so Bobby Seale and them were stuck. They needed somewhere to get out of jail, and at that time they didn't have a Black Panther office in Chicago, because Bobby Rush, who is now a congressman, was trying to open up an office in Chicago, and they told him no. But because they thought that Bobby Seale and them were going to still hijacked that plane, and they put them off in Chicago and took back off and left without them. That's how the Black Panther office in Chicago got opened up. That's how that got opened up. A chance conversation, question like that, scared them crap and said, let me drop this plane and get these niggas off the flight before they try to hijack us. See, it talks about your determination, because you can do bold stuff like that when you're determined and you understand there ain't no cracker got no authority over you. You got force and power yourself. You got force and power yourself. And this is something that we got to understand. This is something that we got to understand. This is something that, you know, we don't make no compromises with. This is where we are, and this is what we do. We're talking about Black August. Now, the cracker said that George Jackson's lawyer brought in a gun and gave it to George Jackson, and they claimed he was hiding his gun in his hair because he had a fro. And he claimed that he was hiding his gun in his fro. So they shot him point blank in the head. Point blank in the head. Now, from him being shot point blank in the head, that's when Attica went up, because they understood who George Jackson was, and they had love for their brother. And here the cracker gonna go and kill him? Go and kill him? How do you do that and not expect that there's gonna be some type of backlash? See, the cracker don't live on that level. The cracker doesn't operate on that level, because they believe that they can do what they want to do, and the hell with what you. The hell with what you say. The hell what you about. They can do anything they want to, and you sit back and accept it. Because there is no right that a black man or woman has that the white man is duty-bound to respect. They don't respect your life. That's why they can kill you and expect that there's not going to be a consequence. They don't care what you do. They don't care nothing about that. They don't care nothing about that. Okay, so and you need to reflect, and you need to think, are you happy with that? That still today, that there's no right that a black person has that the cracker is duty-bound to respect?
Are you okay with that? Are you all right with that? Is that what you look for? Is that what you need? You want to let the status quo just ride? You should not be comfortable with that. You should not be all right with that. Everything has a price. Freedom ain't free. You think about Nat Turner and his rebellion. He knew that doing this may cost me my life. He understood that. But he knew that there was something greater. And that's the future of the people. The future of black people. His people. And he said, this situation, we can't continue it. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. Problem was, there was more people saying it's acceptable. Rather, it's not acceptable. Problem is, you get comfortable, you get used to your enslavement. You get used to it. It becomes normal. Another day of life. While you suffering and the cracker celebrating. That's an imbalance. There's no way, even when the cracker say, I think it was George Washington, not George Washington, Thomas Jefferson. Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. If he knew that, why you ain't know it? He was a quote-unquote Christian. Why you didn't know that? You look at these Christians, these cracker Christians, Joan of Arc. What was it that she knew that you don't know? Constantine, what is it that he knew that you don't know? Now these people are saints in the Catholic religion. But there's miles and miles and miles of blood trails that follow in their name. Why you didn't know it? What did they know that you didn't know? Why did they have that spirit that you sing about? You sing about it and they do it. Where's your ability, your will to fight? Onward, Christian soldier. Marching off as to war. Who are you doing marching as to war? You ain't marching nowhere. You ain't going no war. You sitting down in your church, lying, dancing, shouting, call yourself, I'm speaking in tongues. And you say, we had a good time at church. Yeah, you had a good time playing, laughing, shouting, faking, and your condition never changes. Your condition never changes. You got emotionally hooked. And the condition never changes. See, the church, what is the church main product? Their main product is not freeing you from your present condition. That's not your main product. Their main product. Their main product is selling you a place in the sky where streets of gold, that you suffer here, you be good, and you take your suffering. But Jesus made another place for you in the sky where there is no more suffering, where there is no more pain, where there is no more strife. That's what they sell you. But when they start selling that stuff to you, you need to ask them, well, Pastor, why does the Bible say, as it is done on the earth, so shall it is in heaven? So if I'm suffering down here, then that verse means I'm going to be suffering up there. Why they don't tell you about that? Why they keep that from you? See, family? They want to continue your suffering. They want to continue playing the game with you that you don't even realize. But it's time for you to realize what must be done. And it's time for you to do it. Because you want heaven, you ain't going to never get no heaven up there in no sky. It's going to be right here on this earth where you walk your 2 feet. You're either going to make heaven or somebody going to make hell for you. Period, point blank. You either act or you will be acted upon. And we've been acted upon ever since we came in contact with these demons. But when you act, I said when you act, then you produce change. Asada Shakur is free today because our brothers and sisters act. That's why she's free. Charlie Hill, he's free because he acted. Because they were about to be acted upon. And they said, oh, no, not me. Not me, not today. Today not your day, Cracker. Today is not your day. Today is my day to act. Did you know? Did you know, back in 1973, up in New York City in Muhammad Mosque number 7, police officers were beat up, and one police officer got killed in the mosque in 1973 because somebody called and said that there was a robbery taking place inside the mosque. Police run up in there with their guns thinking they're going to control the show. Fight breaks out. They're getting their ass whooped. Next thing you know, boom, boom, boom. You dead. You dead. See, they came to act. They came to act and got acted upon. And got acted upon. And this is what you got to know. Anytime a black man or woman decides to act, They're going to be free. Now, they killed that cracker cop. Nobody went to jail. The police and their SWAT teams came, and black people in the street came. And the SWAT team was trying to go up into the roof of the houses. Black people said, "You ain't going nowhere. You ain't going nowhere. Today ain't your day, cracker. This is what you got to understand. This is what Black August is all about. It's about acting and not letting this cracker act upon you. You want to be acted upon? Go celebrate your Black History Month. You want to be among the actors. You want to be among the men and the women who understand the time and what must be done. You celebrate. You remember. You live Black August. That's our day. That's our day. That's our time. And we ain't asking no cracker for it. I see our commander's on deck, so I'm going to be quiet and roll over. And Commander, it's yours. Peace and blessings, Big Blue.
Peace and power. Peace and power, family. Everybody, hear me okay? You hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Captain.
Yes, sir.
All right, Kevin, I appreciate you holding down the fort while we was trying to get these activities together. We are at the center. We also trying to put together a live broadcast to bring more people into our Wednesday night broadcast from the local area. So that's what the delay was, but I appreciate the family hanging in there until we got up and going. We're still not where we want to be, but we're going to push on anyway. And we'd like to say to everybody listening, Assalamu alaikum, Hotep, Argani, Free the Land, whatever greeting that you feel are deemed is a necessary greeting. Tonight's broadcast is very critical broadcast because what we want to do tonight, and I'm pretty sure that the captain was doing a pretty good job at what it is that we want to convey tonight. The topic for tonight's broadcast is the Black Liberation Movement, why we must exist. Why we must exist. We're talking about Black liberation that we rarely ever visit in real time in our community. Not just in our community, in our homes, in our institutions, our churches, the few institutions that we have. Very few, almost to none, that we actually have these type conversations. But we wanted to speak to the relevance of the Black Liberation Movement. We wanted to speak to why it is that we would have the courage to push forth with an idea as great as the Black Liberation Movement. So let me say this to couch or to set a foundation for what it is we're about to then. As we stand today, we are nothing more than the sum total of everything that has come before us. Nothing more or nothing less. So the question is, what has come before us that we must acknowledge? And when we talk about that, it takes an extensive look at history to ascertain what it is that we're looking at when we're talking about this Black Liberation Movement in the legitimization of what it is and why we are. We are the sum total of everything that has come before us. And the reason why I like broadcasting from the center, I can look on the wall and I can visibly see that which has come before us. We easily forget about those who have fought, those who have died, those who have given so much to the causation of our liberation. It's easy to forget in this society and in this culture, very easy to forget who we are and what we come from. So tonight, we want to pay homage and respect, and we also want to make people understand the validation of the Black Liberation Movement. I have a Baba. Baba basically means teacher. That expressed to me one day, he said, Brother Patrick, he said, if you want to lead the people to ascertain liberation, he said, you have to know what liberation looks like. You have to know what liberation looks like. And I thought about that. I said, what does Black liberation actually look like? To those of you who chiming in, is listening in through your phones or through whatever apparatus that you're listening, go into the reserves of your mind and think about liberation of Black people. True freedom for Black people. What did that look like? We to some things that some of you may be familiar with that may come across your mind. Something like, does Black liberation look like Black Wall Street? Does Black liberation look like Wokan? Does Black liberation look like ancient Egypt or Nile Valley civilization? What does Black liberation look like? Or have you even ever thought about what Black liberation would look like? Because what we are trying to convey to those who are strained at the idea of Black liberation, what we're trying to convey is a reality that most of us can't even conceive in our mind. Because for the most part, due to generational indoctrination, most of us have become assimilationists. We have become accommodationists. Or we have become conformists to a system that was not crafted to maintain or sustain the quality of the black life. We are presently in that type of system. And the reason why we forget are those three things that I just mentioned. We become acclimated, assimilated, accommodated, and conformed to the society, the system of oppression. Kind of like what my son said the other day. He said, Dad, he said, we just taking another dose of the morphine. Just taking another dose of the morphine. Look at all the systematic injustices that we suffer as a people every day. Think about it. Think about the miseducation system that we send our children to on a daily basis. Think about the religious indoctrination that we give our soul, and not only our soul, but our minds and our money too, religiously. Think about the prison incarceration, prison industrial complexes that have been strategically set up to house and maintain a labor force for rich white men. Think about all of the civil rights inequality, all the humanitarian fight that we occur in this system. And then you ask yourself, what is the solution? Well, I asked myself that question a long time ago. And I came to a conclusion that I was going to be courageous enough to do something about it. But see, you don't have any type of person that's willing to step forward on this type platform. That's why we so devout, mostly by our own people. That's why it's very little participation, things that we do, the efforts that we push forward, because nobody wants to identify with a causation as strong and pronounced as the Black Liberation Movement. So, Bobby Murphy explained to me, he said, you have to know, Brother Patrick, what Black liberation looks like. Like I said, does it look like Wakanda? You know, in the movie The Black Panther, we had Wakanda. Because I want to know, I want to put some ideas into the minds of the people that listen. We moving past the theory that everybody's been talking about for the last 10 years, that this social media thing been taking place, and we had brothers and sisters all on social media with some of the greatest information and some of the greatest wisdom that we ever heard disseminate. But after those 10 years, where are we? Where do we stand today? With all our wisdom, with all our information, all our knowledge, all our degrees, all our money, where do we stand today as a collective, as a people? Do we have a Wakanda? We got enough knowledge. We got enough information. Why don't we have a Wakanda? Why don't we have a Black Wall Street? Why don't we have these things? Because we have not matured enough as a people to stand the reality that we live in and be courageous enough to respond in the appropriate manner. When we do push forth these efforts, white supremacy comes against it. Once white supremacy comes against it and does what it's supposed to do, we never look back. We never go back. What happened to Black Wall Street? What happened to Nile Valley civilization, on those civilizations? Those great expressions of Black power in reality and liberation. So we at war. And most of us continue to take the Novocaine, the morphine drop, like my son said. We continue to take the morphine drop. So I'm just trying to set a stage as to why the Black Liberation Movement exists, because at some point, somebody has to make a stand. It's just not talking on social media. It's just not, that's not the stand that we're talking about. We've been talking on social media. We're talking about a tangible, working, functional reality that's pushed forth by the will and determination of a people. An unbreakable will. And having the knowledge, the wisdom, and the information, that has not been enough. When we're talking about liberation of a people, that's not enough. So we have to have something else to go along with that knowledge and that wisdom and that information that we've been disseminating for 10 years, determination, self-determination. Those are the missing ingredients to ascertaining Black liberation. So the Black Liberation Movement is here. We've been functioning for about 6 years now. And our modus operandi is not to continue to convey the knowledge, the information, and the wisdom. Our position is to perform the practical application, to produce the model example of what it would look like. How many of us understand that? How many of us are willing to do what it takes to make this reality, make this a reality? How many of us willing to do that? We got anybody on the call tonight? I would like for you all to chime in. If we have a member of the Black Liberation Movement, I would like for you to chime in. If you're a member of the Black Liberation Movement that has been inactive, I would like for you to reacquaint yourself and recommit yourself to Black Liberation. We have a very important event that we have been culminating for the last 4 years. This year will be the fifth year. It's called the Black Liberation Movement. It will be the fifth one. This summit, we have people come from all over the nation. People come from all over the nation to convene with us here in Mississippi so that we can have an expression of Black power, so that we can have the dedicated conversation to commit each other to the accountability of what we say we are about. This year we'll be culminating this event September the 16th through the 19th. It'll be a Thursday through a Sunday. We're asking that all of you come out and support and become a part of what it is that we are doing, the Black Liberation Movement. Exists because we are upholding the responsibility that our ancestors thrust upon our shoulders. We have a duty to carry it out. The base tenet of the Black Liberation Movement is founded in the 9 areas of battle that were composed by Dr. Neely Fuller, areas that we are to practically applicate our efforts to synchronize our expertise, our skill set together, and we form the Black Nation. Those areas of battle, politics, economics, labor, law, war, to those areas of battle, because we are diametrically opposed in health and so we have situated ourselves to lay a foundation here in the mighty state of Mississippi. And we solicit others to become a part and a working function of what it is that we do. We have come to a conclusion that no organization is successful without the economic commitment of a critical mass of people. You become part of that critical mass. So what do we do? What are the functions of the Black Liberation Movement? What do we do? We start an agriculture initiative. People may say, well, why an agriculture initiative? There's no culture without agriculture. No nation can stand, no nation can survive with an inability to feed their people. No nation. This very country and system that we victimized by today started out in agriculture society. So we understand that we must develop agriculture if we are serious about the expectation of liberation. There is no culture without agriculture. So we have started forth agriculture initiative that we're looking to expand and grow. What else do we do? Forefront of building African-centered education for our children. An education that's Black first. What are we dealing with? What are we talking about when we're talking about Black first education? Do we really understand the implications and the importance of a Black first education? First education means that we put our story before his story. We put our priority before their priority. We put our children before anybody else's children, and we put ourselves before anybody else's children. Children, that we are important. Unlike the daily dose of white supremacist indoctrination that they get on a daily basis in the public school systems, we have to look at how the system is dealing with us right now. The system understands society right now. And they trying by any means necessary to keep it out of the classrooms. Pretty sure most of you have heard of the CRT, or the critical race theory, that's being banned all across our nation. Right now, I think Texas and Tennessee have banned critical race theory. You may be saying, well, what is critical race theory? Critical race theory basically suggests that there could be no critical thinking concerning the historic relationship between races, where it can be deduced that one race is superior over another based on the social interactions of those people. To make an example of what I'm talking about, critical race theory would suggest that if we look at the relationship between black and white people, we have to look at historically the institution of slavery. And if we look at the institution of slavery, economic venture of empowerment for white people. So the reciprocal side of that is that if it's an economic empowerment process for white people, then what is it for black people? It's a process, generation after generation, economic castration, subjecting our people to abject poverty, subjecting our people to a position of what Dr. Claude Anderson called a permanent underclass. Critical standpoint. So critical race theory suggests that you are doing the calculation, looking at history with a logic that suggests you can make a determination that somebody has sought out to be superior to somebody else. That's being banned. Even the whole idea of teaching the institution of slavery is being banned. If we understand white supremacy and how it works, we will understand that once white people began to mandate for one segment of society, you best believe that the mandate is coming for all. So now Texas and Tennessee have made the first move on critical race theory. And this is a subject that's dear to my heart, because I have two children. One of them is my son. Let you all in on a conversation that me and my son was having, because we live this real time. My son said, "Dad, I'll be teaching this year. I have a history class, and I'm kind of eager, I'm kind of nervous, and I'm kind of anxious." He said, "I think I'm more eager. Tell me about it." I said, "What would you be teaching?" He said, "I'll be teaching history." I said, "Wow. You'll be teaching history." I said, "Son, are you aware of critical race theory?" He said he wasn't. So I explained critical race theory to him, and I told him that critical race theory had been banned in Tennessee. And in Tennessee. My son has a very keen on his critical race theory was. And he said, and I told him that it had been banned in Tennessee. He started to think about his classroom and how him being a history teacher, he felt like his job was to provoke thought. Once he understands the weaponization of the banning of critical race theory, he saw how that could be impeded. His willingness to teach truth, to stand in front of a classroom of young men and women who look like him, teach truth, is being restricted by the government. I said, son, what do you think about that? He says, oh, Dad, let me get this clear. So let's take Christopher Columbus, for instance. The white supremacist narrative would have it that Christopher Columbus discovered America in 1492. Columbus discovered America in 1492. What did the people do that was here when he got here? I said, exactly, son. I said, but to teach that Christopher Columbus discovered America in 1492 is a damn lie. Is illegal. So what do you do about that? Told me, he said, Dad, I couldn't do that. I said, what do you mean? He said, I could not teach a lie. I said, even if it meant your job? He said, Dad, even if it meant my job. So that's why the Black Liberation Movement exists, to produce mindsets like that. But not just to produce mindsets like that. What happens when our people begin to make these determinations on principle? It's based on truth and honor. You know, the things that make us human. What happens when they begin to make these decisions? They have no other source of employment. They got pride, but they don't have a way. Whose responsibility is that? The Black Liberation Movement exists because we can't have a situation where we have our people standing on truth. And when they stand on truth, they have nowhere to go. When a white man tell them they no longer are employed to build a world. It's conscious talk that most of us like. We like it in the theory. We like the knowledge pontification part. We don't like the tangible, practical, applicated part of consciousness, of being woke, as we say. We don't like that part. Take something. It ain't just a podcast. It ain't just a Facebook Live. It ain't just a YouTube session. It's a building process. We were talking the other day. And I mentioned to the class, I said, white supremacy is a doing process. Black liberation is still in the theory stage. No theoretical truth can battle with that's in motion and in action and doing. White supremacy, the whole institution is based on lies. While we sit around and feel good because we know the truth, we tell the truth. But we don't build on the truth. This is why the Black Liberation Movement exists. Because from its conception, the Black Liberation Movement is about the practical application of theory. Why we don't have controlled townships. Why we don't have black controlled resources. People say, I see you gardening. A lady called me today. Had a conversation today with a lady in Flint, Michigan. She said, I'm really impressed with your gardening. Gardening is what little white women do in their backyards and what they doing up there in the city on their patios. That's gardening. What we talking about when we talking about nation built. White folks didn't build America, Gandhi. Talking about controlling resources. And did that come into your conscious conversation? The Black Liberation Movement is talking about controlling resources, food, water. Where do we control that at? Basic fundamental building blocks of life. Talking about nation building. How are we really talking about, if we're not talking about building resources? I've listened to Dr. Claude Anderson today. He said, Biden ain't got nothing for y'all. He said, Biden came in talking about jobs. He said, you know what jobs mean in a capitalist society? Lumumba, you offending people. People got good jobs. No. This is what I'm saying. Job in a capitalist society. Those ain't my words. Oh, Dr. Claude Anderson's words, he know better than me. Go pick up Power Numbers. Go pick up Dirty Little Secret. Go pick up Black Labor, White Wealth. And let them break it down to you on your job. Staying in your life and creating bills that force you to keep your job in a capitalist society. But when you have an organized effort, a powerful idea like the Black Liberation Movement that's saying black people, I learned that word upcycle from watching African cartoon with my daughter, True. The word upcycle basically means taking something old and recycling it, making something new. Black people should be tired of jobs. We should be looking to own and control. Own and control. If you're going to live here, capitalism, you know, we can't live under capitalism. You right. You sure the fuck can't live under capitalism. Not long as white people control it. Not long as white people control it, because white, I don't see nothing wrong with capitalism, to tell you the truth. We need to be capitalizing on some things that I said. I had devised years ago in my mind. I said, ain't nothing wrong with capitalism. Look at why white people. Not that you practice capitalism in a way that they practice capitalism, because capitalism is basically a form of exploitation. See, it's a form of exploitation that was crafted in the minds of white people that suggests a minority can own a majority and be in control. White capitalism suggests that black people, that don't mean you can't be a capitalist. That means you just don't operate capitalism in that mindset of exploitation. I know it works because I capitalize all the time. And what do? Other people benefit. People get out of debt because of my capital. Operate in a form of social capitalism. Second, social capitalism. And Mari Muhammad had $1 million. And Patrick had nothing. Should I be mad at Mari for being a capitalist? If he reach out to his brother and say, brother, I have plenty. You have none. So I give you of mine. See, the white man not going to say that with his capitalism. We have to have a social capitalism. We have to be social in our capitalism. But what I'm simply saying is that we have to control something. Religion. Same thing. If you're talking about the basic tenets of being a Christian, which is to do unto others as you have them do unto you. But that's not the Christianity you have. You have a Judeo-Christianity, a white supremacist Christianity that suggests that white people are supreme, downright sinful to think otherwise. That's the type of Christianity you have. But what if you crafted a religion that was conducive to you? That's why the Black Liberation Movement exists, to bring these issues to the forefront. But not only to bring them to the forefront, to act in a manner that's conducive for the progression of our people and to be bold enough to change the reality. That's why the Black Liberation Movement exists. Dr. Laverne Murphy said, Patrick, he said, you're going to have a hard time. Anybody that attempts to do what it is that we are doing, going to have a hard time. People to move in this manner. He said, but you don't seek all black people. You seek a critical mass of black people. And see, that's where we get off to. We get off thinking that we're going to do something national before we do something local. We get off thinking that. And I'm beginning to think that people who think like that is just a scapegoat. It's just a scapegoat. They got this grand national plan, but they ain't put nothing local together. They ain't put a small model together. The United started out with a few colonies and a determined idea. Just a few colonies and a determined idea. They called it manifest destiny. And white supremacy swept across the country. Black liberation has to take the same course. We have to begin to show small model examples of what it is that we're talking about. We have to be able to control small demographics, culturally terraform these demographics so that people will know that we exist, so that we can prove to ourselves that we can govern ourselves. We can civically develop ourselves so that the world can grow to respect the existence of our people. And this is why the Black Liberation Movement exists. Courage don't mean that you're not afraid. Courage means that you go on even if you are afraid. And I tell them all the time, you practice courage over and over and over and over again until you become brave. Crap, as Brother Maurice called, 3K. This cracker said, land of the free, home of the brave. Home of the brave. The brave. Determination. The Black Liberation Movement exists to make our people brave, to create a generation of children that's ready to push forth uncompromised. It's our job to create the foundation for them to stand on. I love brothers and sisters all the time. Brother Lumumba. Do you read? Do you do this? Do you do that? Yes, I do. 1,000 books. But if you're not able to use that information for the benefit of your life, what good is it? Trying to show why the Black Liberation Movement exists. Practical application. I asked some questions this week on social media that were designed to gather information from our people so that we can have conversation over social media that was conducive to our growth and progress as people. So the question was designed to gather content. Posted one question. The question was, why does the Black church stand clear of social injustices that suffered by Black people? Some very interesting responses. Some people that I knew would comment. But the majority of our people just look and walk on by. Either they didn't have the knowledge necessary to respond, or they felt offended by the question itself, because most of our people are diffident and most of our people are in these churches. And I did have some people come in my inbox that there was a reason why they was in my inbox, that they want to be seen on the post. I did take the information, and next week I'll do a live broadcast entertaining that. But the reason why I'm bringing it up is because it was very little participation in that. It was very little interaction. When you're talking about real social dynamics, dealing with our problems, but nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to engage. I tagged some preachers. They did not respond. That didn't disappoint me. That was expected. So when you begin to gauge our people and you begin to see the lack of courage, the lack of dealing with reality, you begin to understand why we're in this condition. And people like myself begin to understand that we need a Black Liberation Movement. We need a Black Liberation Movement. I asked another question. The question was, why is it assumed that the North is less racist than the South? Very little conversation. Very little conversation. Very little conversation. I asked another question. I said, why is it that we give our children these white names? I know that'll offend a lot of people. A lot of people feel like I probably didn't even have the right to ask that question. But I had some commentary today with a young lady, laid out of Flint, Michigan. And that's very important, by the way, a name. A name is very important. We got to the point now where we naming our children the white people with white names. I'm going to say that. I'm not saying after white people. I'm just going to say these white names. Y'all know what white names are. Culturally appropriate names. So the young lady, she came on the post and she said, you know, this irritates me that we name our children these ghetto names. We need decent names. I said, so what is a decent name? Your name, Patrick, those decent names. She said, now if you say Shalisa, Talisa, that's ghetto. Consider my name decent. As a matter of fact, it's inappropriate because Patrick is Irish and Alexander is Greek, and I'm neither. But you call it decent, and you call Shalisa ghetto. And then she came back. I said, she came back and she said something that irritated me so bad that I wanted to talk to her verbally. I had her give me her number because I wanted to talk to her. And what she said that irritated me so bad, she said that, you see, we are Americans with African ancestry. Continuing to build this case for this inappropriate naming process that we done took on people. So I called her, and I said, you know, it really bothers me that you said that we are Americans with African ancestry. To feed us to what you're saying about these names. I said, because I don't see it like that. I think it'd be interesting because I'm not trying to impose on you my thoughts, but I think it'd be interesting if you looked at it from another perspective. And that perspective is that, like, we are Africans in an American culture. Well, you're right. We share both cultures. I said, do we? I said, well, let me ask you this. Do white people share cultures with us? Do they share culture? So again, I said, do you think as a white person in America, since we share culture, is it a white person in America named Kunta Kinte? She immediately said, no. I said, why? Why is it not a white person in America named Kunta Kinte? Not one white person in America. We share cultures, right? Yeah. We share cultures. They like our music. They like our way we play sports. I said, that's not sharing cultures. They exploit those things that they like about our culture. It's exploitation. Culture. I told her, I said, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. I have been in white-owned restaurants, Asians in the restaurant, speaking Hispanic language. And they were told by the white employers or employees or owners, whoever they were, you can't talk. We only speak English in here. We only speak English in here. See, when you're a liberated people, you don't have to share cultures. You don't have to share cultures when you're liberated and when you have power. See, the reason why we name our children this is because we want to be accommodated, frictionless in this society. She even alluded to an experience that she had when she was trying to obtain a job, and she called the people, and they thought I was white. That's what she told me. They thought I was white because in my post I said, naming your children white, white names don't make them white. It just make them black children with white names. Premises don't target names. It target black people. It targets black people. So your name not going to cover up your blackness. And she played right into that with her own life experience. She said she went for a job interview. And y'all, everything was good until she showed up. She said, I did everything. I talked proper. I said, what is talking proper? That's another one that killed me. What is talking proper? See, when you challenge somebody on that, you know, is that what they call perfect subject-verb agreement? Is that what talking proper is? No, that ain't what talking proper is, because I can sound ghetto and put all my subject verbs and all that together, but long as I sound ghetto, that's not proper, right? See, talking proper means sounding white. That's what that means. She proved my point today. Thought I was white. Okay. Okay, and your name was Lisa, which could have been a white or a black person, right? Yeah. So then when you won them over the phone, which is not absolute communication, because communication is visual and audible. You beat them. You tricked them with the audible part because you were proper. But what happened when you showed up for the interview? They recognized you were black. Did your white name work? No, it didn't work. White power worked. And it made a determination regardless of what your name is. So at the end of that post, I said, be proud of your blackness. Build based on your blackness, and the world would come to respect it. And the world would come to respect it. So the Black Liberation Movement must exist for these purposes. We must exist so that we can build a tangible reality, a model example of black pride. Show the world again that we are a people of relevance. That we are a people not of God, but God. But God. We soliciting you all to become a part of the bold, to become a part of the brave, courageous, the intelligent, the confident, the Black Liberation Movement. We're inviting you to be a part of our annual event, that you can learn more what it is to do September the 16th through the 19th. Fast approaching. Those dates are fast approaching. We'd like to see your face there. We'll have flyers for those of you who have been part of the movement to make a recommitment to what it is that you committed to at one point. Let's function. See, we forget our response. Kind of like not doing something that your mother told you to do. You know, my mother told me a long time ago that she wanted to see success. So it had become my responsibility to become what my mother desired. That's my personal life responsibility. But what type of responsibility do we have as a people? If I sit here and look at the faces of Ida B. Wells, Mega Evans, a whole host of those who have lost their lives in this social injustice system. I look at the pictures of Sandra Bland, George Stinney Jr., Emmett Till, Jordan Davis, Philando Castile, the four little girls that were killed in the bombing in Alabama, Trayvon Martin, and the brother that was killed selling cigarettes in New York City, and a whole host of others depending on us to perform a duty. See, if you ain't connected like that, you don't feel that inherent responsibility. If you're not reminded, you don't feel that inherent responsibility. See, if you have become assimilated into the system, you don't feel that inherent responsibility. See, that Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior, and he died on the cross for you, you don't feel that inherent responsibility. We race first. We race first because I can't see how a white man, and he is white in our in our mind, had more of a connection to me than those that have died and shed real blood for salvation. I just can't see that. But see, if you're not acquainted with people who have that type of discernment and conviction, people that have that type of knowledge and understanding, the people that have a respect for our people, that we would not be indoctrinated and controlled by the lies, but we would stand on truth. If you're not affiliated, then you go on with business as usual. But if you are touched, if you are informed, if you are enlightened, you know, all it took was for a little experience in my life to happen. It showed me what I was. The system showed me what I was, and I wasn't foolish. I wasn't foolish about what it was I was seeing. I didn't deal with it with a psychosis that it wasn't what it was, and that everything was going to be all right. And Jesus was going to fix it. I deal with it from a real perspective in life. And as I began as a young man to deal in that manner, my mind began to shift. I began to shed off all the bull crap. I began to see it for what it was, like Neo and Macy. I began to see the system for what it was. And I began to search for truth. And in my search for truth, I began to empower myself It begins with a search for truth. And then once you understand truth, you inherit the responsibility to build on that truth, a reality for your people. So as it stands, we have about 10 minutes left on this session that I do my job in making us understand why the Black Liberation Movement exists. I don't know if we have any callers or any questions. But if we do not, let it be known that we are here. We're not going anywhere. And we need you to become part of what it is that we're doing. I'm going to leave you all with this parable that Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught. He said that truth and lie went swimming one day. While they were in the water, lie jumped out of the water and put on truth clothes, out of the water, and started to chase lie. He said, what do you have? He said, you got the naked truth chasing a well-dressed lie. Truth chasing a well-dressed lie. The Black Liberation Movement is the naked truth. And the responsibility has fallen upon our shoulders to build a world. Can't say that it's not a burden, that I don't get frustrated. I can't say that I don't get tired. I can't even say that I don't get lonely. Solicited my ancestors last night before I went to bed. And I asked them that if I die, let me be crushed under the weight of Black liberation. I said, if I die, let me be crushed, Black liberation. That's all I ask. That's all I ask. Thank you all for listening tonight. You all for listening, Brother Marie. You take it from here.
Yes, sir, Brother Commander. Excellent program. And as we always say, you kill the nigga in you, I'm going to kill the nigga in me, and our God will reign supreme. We are Black First, today, tomorrow, and forever. Love you, family. Peace and blessings. As-salamu alaykum. Shalom.